This is a true story that was reported a number of years ago in a Missouri newspaper. In downtown St. Louis, a driver stopped at a red light and a pedestrian waiting for the light to change noticed that one of the car's tires was almost flat. Pointing to the tire, the driver yelled out, "Hey, your front tire is down." The driver got out of the car, looked at the tire, and said to the pedestrian, "Well, thanks for being a good Samaritan." The pedestrian leaped off the curb, went straight to the driver, and started punching him out. He said, "You can't call me that." The driver began punching the pedestrian out. Both of them ended up in the hospital because one mistook a compliment as an insult. A compliment which was biblically based at that. "You Samaritan." What did he think he was being called? Fascinating. Jesus realized how prone we are on this planet to attack, whether it's provoked or not. The master teacher was the most brilliant psychologist the planet has ever seen. A psychiatrist and student of Freud named James Tucker Fisher wrote a book about mental health professionals entitled "A Few Buttons Missing." Not a great title. He ended the book with this observation: "I dreamed of writing a handbook that would be simple, practical, easy to understand, and easy to follow for those seeking mental health. I attended every symposium possible and took notes on the wise teachers and my colleagues who were leaders in the field. And then, quite by accident, I discovered that such a work had already been completed. If you were to take the sum total of all the authoritative articles ever written by the most qualified of psychologists and psychiatrists on the subject of mental hygiene, you would probably have an awkward and incomplete summation on the Sermon on the Mount. And it would suffer immeasurably through comparison. The Sermon on the Mount is the greatest speech, sermon, talk ever given. It is the most complete sermon that we have ever had and probably ever will." We're going to take a look at just a little bit of that sermon today, the part called the Beatitudes. A beatitude is a declaration of blessing, of happiness, and we find them all through Scripture. In Psalm 128, we read, "Blessed is everyone who is in awe of the Lord, who walks in his ways. You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands, you shall be happy, and it shall be well with you." So a beatitude is composed of the declaration of the happiness, a description of the happiness, and the result of that blessing. So the declaration in Psalm 128 is to love and revere God. The description of that is to be guided in the work that God has for you. And the result is you'll be happy and you'll have a great life. Very simple, very straightforward teaching. Now today we might phrase Psalm 128 as, be open and receptive to the guidance of God from your heart as to what you would love to do in your life. And you'll be satisfied and joyful in doing your heart's desire when you're guided by God. Now the form Jesus uses in his Beatitudes appear to be a little different. It seems as though the blessing is negative or limited, but the result is happiness. And to our minds, that seems totally illogical and paradoxical. Here's what Jesus said. "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for justice, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are those who are merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for the sake of justice, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when men revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for great is your reward in heaven." Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Now, we could be here for hours going through all of them, but I have to take my dog out this afternoon, so we won't be here. Well, what I do want to take a look at is what the Bible scholars say are the authentic Beatitudes that Jesus spoke. If we compare all of the Beatitudes that are from the original source, which is called Q, Q is the original writings that the disciples or followers of Jesus wrote on scraps of paper. They're all collected into one little early manuscript called the Q source. So Matthew, Mark, and Luke went, they drew their information from Q, and John was something completely different 100 years later. But Matthew, Luke, and the Gospel of Thomas all have Beatitudes, but there are only four that are in all of them. There are four that Matthew added himself: the meek, the merciful, the pure in heart, and the peacemakers. Are all well and good, and they're wonderful, and they're beautiful and helpful, but they're only in Matthew, and no doubt was inserted by the Christian community at a later date. These indicate a reward for virtuous living, rather than addressing the very pressing need they had at the time for the realization of God at work through their pain and through their unhappiness. See, Jesus knew that life on the planet was really, really tough. It was extremely difficult to live 2,000 plus years ago. They lived in a very hostile world where Jesus' community was under constant threat of extortion, of domination, of persecution, and even annihilation for the smallest infractions. It was an extremely stressful time to live back then. He saw these people gathered in front of him on that mountainside, his family, his friends, his community. He greatly loved these people, and he saw their suffering that they were going through, and he wanted to offer something that would be helpful. He saw that they were suffering not only under Roman rule, but under their own leaders called the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin were a group of the House of Lords. They were the upper crust of the society. And they wanted nothing more than to keep everything very quiet. Rome was difficult enough, and if there was any insurrection or any problem, they didn't want the Roman rulers or the soldiers breathing down their necks. And they actually had their own community working for the Romans as tax collectors and as informants, kind of like working under Nazi informants. So it was very difficult for the people back then. Right around the corner, at any moment, could be famine, disease, severe weather that would wipe your crop out. There is nothing you could do about that. Criminals and the most uncomfortable modes of transportation you could ever imagine. So the next time your plane is delayed, just think, thank you, God, I don't have to ride an ass all the way to Chicago. We are blessed. In his very first sermon to the people, he told them, I understand what you're going through. I know you're in pain. I can see that you're suffering. I know you came today because life is just unbearable. It's unbearable what you have to go through. But here's how you can get out of it. Here's how you can overcome whatever you're facing. The teachings of Jesus just weren't for his people 2,000 years ago. They also work for us today if we can apply them. In the midst of your pain, in the midst of your fears of debt and grief and a health crisis or divorce or losing your home or losing a loved one, there's an answer for you, and our great teacher and brother reveals what it is. He began with, blessed are you who are poor in spirit, for yours is the kingdom of heaven. What did he mean by poor in spirit? For centuries, we've only heard the poor part. Blessed are you who poor, and even through the years, priests and ministers say, if you're poor, it means you're very special. No, it doesn't. It just means you're poor. But poor in spirit is different. Poor in spirit is an Aramaic term. Aramaic being the language that Jesus spoke back then, and then it was translated into Greek and other languages, and we lost the meaning behind what he said originally. To be poor in spirit doesn't mean to live in poverty. It means that we are no longer bound by possessions that seem to overwhelm us and control our lives. So we have to ask ourselves, what is my possession today in the 21st century? Ideas that own you to the degree that you are bound by psychic chains to them is what is possessing you. And we have quite a few of them in our lives. Some of them are addictions to drugs, alcohol, and other stimulants that we use to substitute for God's joy and love. Because we don't feel that, because we haven't been able to tune into it, to tap into it, we've been using other means to try to drown out the pain. In the meantime, we've been drowning out the joys as well. We don't want to do that anymore. What else are great possessions? Other people's opinions are great possessions. We do so much because we think, oh, other people will think this about me. There's a book out that says that most of the stuff that we now hear on television, even in the news, comes from public relation firms that are only hired to give journalists their skewered points of view. That means most of the information from the so-called experts is incorrect that we're hearing. And we're buying it. We're buying it all. Oh, that guy on the internet says so-and-so is true, so it must be. He's the blogger who made it up. I don't care. He said it. It must be true. We are also possessed by our own misunderstandings of our true, perfect, wonderful selves. We forgot who we are. So we're possessed by this image that we have created about who and what we are. That we are not pure, that we're not holy, that we're not perfect as we have been created by God to be. We think that we're not all that terrific, really. And that is the thing that will keep our success in life away from us. If you think that you're not good enough to have success, to have a right and perfect mate, to have healing, to have anything, you're the one who is keeping what God desires you to have away from you. There was a 5-year-old girl who saw her first Miss America pageant, and she knew she wanted to be Miss America. Who here has felt that? And how many women? Okay. I'm just saying, you know, everybody has fantasies. It's wonderful. It's good. But this girl knew she was going to be Miss America. And then when she was 11 years old, she was in a terrible car accident. For a year, she wore a full body cast, and she had over 100 stitches in her face. And then after the cast came off, she found that she had a severe limp. A Miss America with a limp and scars. Not going to happen. Impossible. But the girl didn't listen to those around her telling her, give up your dream. No well-meaning friends, no pageant experts, no one at all could convince her that her dream was not going to come true. And they all felt so bad for her, saying, oh, she really should wake up to reality and see what's going on. But, you know, she had faith. She had faith that she was going to be Miss America. So at 17, she entered her first county pageant. Didn't even make the top 10. The next year, she entered again, didn't make the top 5. Again, the third time, she won the county, but she lost state. The fourth year, she won county again, but she lost really big at state level. And people were saying, honey, give up. Give up. And she said, no, I know, I've known since I was 5 what I was here to do. She knew in her heart the experts telling her what they were telling her was wrong. On the 5th time, she won the county and she won the state. Then she went on to win Miss America. She won the pageant. Her name was Cheryl Pruitt. Cheryl Pruitt was poor in spirit, because there were no negative possessions that she was holding on to telling her that it couldn't happen. To be poor in spirit is really a rather Eastern concept of emptying ourselves of all the negativity that would be blocking the good from moving forward. To be poor in spirit means to let go and let God do the work. To be poor in spirit means to let go of the idea that you know how something is going to happen, or how something is not going to happen in your life, but that God really and truly has the good waiting for you. If you can imagine it, God has the way to bring it to you. the divine idea has built into it its own manifestation. It knows how to move in your life without your help at all, thank you. Let it go. Just hold on to the dream, be faithful, be excited, and then do what Spirit is calling you to do every day. We possess this illogical belief that we know the best way for our good to show up, how the healing is going to happen, where the success is going to take place, how the financial windfall is going to happen, how our soulmates have to appear. Thank you. That is very laughable because we don't know anything. We know nothing. We don't know how, when, or where God is going to do it. So empty your mind, empty your heart of that illusion and just get ready for it to show up. Just know it will happen without fail and then go do what you're here to do. Cheryl Pruitt just knew that it was going to happen by faith. How? She didn't know. She just kept going. Keep going. Your healing is going to happen. Your job is to have faith. Say, thank you, God. I can't wait to see how you're going to work this. I don't know. But if I have the dream, if I have it in my heart, I know it. I just know it. You know when something's right. Charles Fillmore, when he first saw Myrtle Fillmore, looked and he heard a voice say, this is your wife. Really? That wasn't from him. That was from Spirit. He just said, all right, I'm going to pursue it. And it happened. Let go and let God do it through you. When you let your negative possessions, ideas, and thoughts go, then the good of God has room to move into your life and do what you want it to do. The next one is, blessed are you who mourn, for you shall be comforted. One of the most challenging experiences on this planet is loss. Loss is really tough to take. 2,000 years ago, there was a lot of loss. Death of a child or a mother was extremely common during childbirth. Infant mortality was so high. War, famine, government persecution was widespread. Old age was 40. Middle age was 25. 50 was ancient. As I said, do you take this person till death do you part? Sure, you know, it's like, you know. January, sure, you know. They thought they were going to be 50, 75 years. They go, I'll meditate on that for a while. Today, we still lose those we love either to physical death or people moving away. We live in a very transient society. People move in and out of our lives so quickly. People come in and out of the unity of New York so quickly. It's like they're here, they're gone, they're here, they're gone. It's hard to keep up sometimes. Other forms of loss involve jobs we thought were permanent. I thought, I'm going to have this job for the rest of my life. What happened? Marriages or relationships that fall apart, you thought everything was just hunky-dory. Everything is great. Where they left? Why? How? Losing a body part or the use of your body in some way. Loss of your hair. Oh, my gosh. Some people say the hair is the best part of me. Where'd it go? Losing your teeth, losing your youthful looks. Loss of physical beauty. If you're a gorgeous individual when you were 19, 20, 21, it can be very difficult. I've known some actors and actresses who were physically what you would consider to be perfect, and they had a really hard time making the adjustment to getting older and not being looked at in that way anymore. Loss of a 28-inch waist that prayer doesn't seem to work very well for. I keep praying. The losses we experience in life seem to reveal that our good is not permanent, that I can't count on the good being here forever, that which I love can be taken away at any moment, and I can't seem to count on God for keeping what I love with all my heart. It's often during these times of loss that we are finally open and receptive to God because we feel we have nowhere else to turn. People often come here and say, you're my last hope, which is, you know, kind of a little frightening for... It's just a talk. It's just a Sunday talk. Believe me. But it's really not about me. It's about you showing up and knowing that God really was the first answer, not the last. But you're here now because Spirit has led you to say, you finally found it. Like Linda's saying to Dorothy, you had the power the whole time. You just had to take that journey to realize it, to know the truth. The hard-to-accept truth is that God never takes anything away. Never. The universe is not a taker, it's a giver. The universe is always giving us more and more and more good. That which we no longer have on the physical realm is something either that we have released back to the universal energy field, or the person we seem to have lost moved on to another experience of good. In unity, our unity prayer that we affirmed this morning, nothing in my life is lost, missing, or stolen. That which seems missing is promptly restored, or its equivalent in value is manifested. That's a truth we really need to know. I invite you to memorize that so you have that. If something seems to be... I always use that when I can't find my keys. It always works. Nothing's lost, missing, or stolen. Oh, hi, there you are. Thank you very much. It shows up. But that's the truth of how the universe operates. If I seem to lose a person through death, I haven't really lost her. She is just invisible in form. She didn't go anywhere. What happens during what we call the process of death is your body vibrates. When your soul knows it's time to leave, your body begins to vibrate at such a pitch that you leave this body, this shell that is no longer useful to you, behind. It's sort of like taking off an old shoe at the end of the day that's really been pinching your feet. And what it feels like is, oh, I didn't realize how heavy that had become. But you're fine. The person who's gone on is absolutely fine. They're happy. They know you. They're with you. They see you. They're there. And we're crying. And we're miserable because we can't see them. We can't feel them. We can't touch them. I may grieve the person's physical loss not being here, but the truth is they're not dead because there is no death in God. It's just a transition from this three-dimensional reality to the fourth-dimensional reality. I can experience this person at any time by simply going within, calling them forth, and knowing that they're here. If they come to your mind, if all of a sudden you're walking down the street and you think about your mom, or you think about a person who's passed in your life, that just means that they're telling you hello. They're just showing up saying, hi, I'm here with you. No matter how a person leaves our lives, the truth is we always have them in our hearts. They're always alive, but just in a form I cannot perceive with my senses. The love that they are is a permanent and real gift of spirit. Even those who leave through divorce or moving away, the love that they are is still a part of me. The love that they are and shared with me is always going to be a permanent part of my soul. The love that they are has released more of God into my life. So they are never missing from me. We are always one with each other, and that was just further proof of that reality. So the unity prayer that we use for anything lost or missing comes from the realization that the presence of God is always here, and I can't lose anything. Even if you lost a lot of money in the stock market or you win the lottery and you blew it, there's more available. You just have to tap into it, use it wisely, and know the Spirit is bringing it forth. That good may take a different form than what I thought. If I lose something, then the universe will bring back into my life the equivalent of it. The ear of that the locusts have taken from me, as it says in Scripture, will be returned to me over and over and over again. When I let God flow through me as healing, as love, as peace or joy, I then have the full realization, the powerful realization, that the thing I seem to have lost was just a form of God, that the form is showing up in a new and wonderful way. So I now realize that I can never lose God. I realize that the form of God that came into my life as my mother or my father, my best friend, spouse or partner, my cat, whatever it might, will always be with me, always be a part of me, even though I can't see them or experience them with my senses. God's good is always here. Do you have a friend that you haven't seen for 10, 20 years, and when you finally meet, you like pick up right where you were. The conversation seems to have, oh yeah, by the way, and then you're off again. That's a realization that there truly is no separation in time or space. That's a God-holy relationship that you have. When you mourn or grieve a loss, turn to God and you'll be comforted by the truth that there is nothing missing, nothing lost ever within you. I want you to close your eyes for a moment. I want you to call forth a person in your life. On this Mother's Day, it might be a mother or a grandmother, or maybe your dad or aunt, uncle, whatever it might be, whoever that person, let them come to you. Feel them in your heart. See them as happy, as well. They're completely whole and fine. As a matter of fact, their spirit looks about 30 years old, no matter what age they were when they left. This person is always going to be a part of you, always going to be in your life. See them radiating that wonderful God energy of love, of joy, of peace. They are completely, totally, fully at peace in their lives, no matter how they were when they left. They are forever a part of you. They gave you a gift of love. They gave you a gift of joy. No matter how long they've been gone, they are with you right now. And they took the love that you are with them. You are always a part of their soul. You gave them a perfect, holy, wonderful gift. Know that you are forever one with each other. Breathe into your heart and open your eyes. I'm sorry, we should have had Kleenex this morning, but yeah, that's God leaking out. Those are tears. Those are healing, wonderful realization, tears of joy. You felt the reality of that truth. There's nothing with the senses that would say that's true, but your heart is telling you this is the truth. They're here. We have so many people here today with us. Those in your lives that you just called forth are still with us, and I know that you can feel them. Britt has the amazing ability to bring forth dead people. He's Haley Joel Osment. Not only does he see dead people, but he makes you see them too. We were in a movie one day, and I said, I feel your dad's with us. He's sitting right behind us. And he didn't even pay to get into the movie theater. Another time, one of his friend from Norway's mother passed away, and we were chatting when he came back, and I said, she's here, isn't she? He said, yeah, she's standing right there near the steps. I never really feel this until he's around. I mean, he just keeps bringing this energy. He has a gift of seeing the dead. It's a wonderful. So if you want to see, if you want to ask him, just he'll tell you if they're here today. It's a gift. What can I tell you? The next one is, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for justice, for they shall be satisfied. This is such an important teaching to understand. Justice seems to be equal to the notion of fairness. We often hear, life isn't fair. Well, the truth is, life is not fair. Life is not fair. Life is more than fair. Life is of God. Therefore, God, it goes beyond fairness into justice, into truth. Justice, when we turn to God as divine justice, always wins out, is always here. That's because the spiritual concept of divine order, harmony, and balance are real. It's the truth of who we are. Our problem has been in trying to make justice work. We want to take it into our own hands. I'm going to sue them. I'm going to make them suffer as I did. I want blood. I'm a double Scorpio. Believe me, I understand what this means. It's something I have had to get beyond in my own life. But that's not justice. That's a Daniel Craig movie. It isn't the reality of the universe. And if you try to make that your reality, then you're leaving God out of it. Divine justice comes from holding the truth in your heart and knowing that God is truly at work and guiding you as to do what is next. Jesus also put it this way. He said, do not resist evil. Don't fight, you're giving your energy to that which seems to be evil, which is a human creation, not a divine creation. Don't give your power away by fighting what you perceive to be an unfair situation. Let go and let God reveal what to do. Now, God may reveal an action. God may reveal to stand up for yourself, to sue if it's going to help the planet and to help things come forth in divine order. But go to God first. Don't do it out of revenge. Do it out of a desire for divine justice to take hold. Mother Teresa had that problem when she first went to India. The Orthodox Hindus and the government did everything they could to intimidate and harass her into leaving the country. They would threaten repeatedly physical violence, and one day as she and the sisters were bringing the dying men and women who were suffering to her shelter, they began throwing rocks and bricks at them. But she held to the truth that she was doing God's work there in India and that God would take care of her and her sisters doing what they were there to do. One day, she noticed a group outside of a Kali temple. A Brahmin priest was lying on the ground in front of the temple in horrible pain due to cholera. No one would touch him. They said, no, not good. So Mother Teresa went over, bent down, picked the priest up herself, and brought him to her shelter. Day after day, she nursed him, and he finally recovered. He went back to the temple and announced, for 30 years, I have worshipped a Kali of stone. But this gentle woman I have met is a real Kali, a Kali of flesh and blood. No one ever again threw a rock at the sisters while they were doing their work. Divine justice came from holding to the truth that God is here and that God is guiding me to do what I know I'm here to do. If you're being persecuted at work, your job is to bless them. Hold them in love because they're scared. They're not scared of you, they're scared of something going on in their own lives. What will happen when you bless them is either they will respond back to you in love, or your love will be so great that they'll leave. Or you'll get a better job and you'll leave. If you're not treated well by your family, bless them. Surround them in light. Shoot arrows of love at them. Cannons of love. Atomic bombs of love. Grenades of love. What happens when you truly love them, again, they will change. They will move somewhere else. Or spirit will bring you to California. Or Jersey, wherever you need to be, where the toxicity is not going to affect you. If you have a grievance against somebody, if you really are holding something against somebody, bless them. Let them go. The situation will change because God is in charge and your divine justice will be truly at work. And now, it may come in a different time frame. It may come in a form that you did not expect. But we have to realize nobody has power over you. No one has power over a powerful child of God. You've got to remember that. Please understand that you're a child of God and therefore you are powerful. Nobody is more powerful than you. Nobody's less powerful than you, but nobody is more powerful than you. We all have the same power. If you're having any kind of challenge in your life, the Beatitudes remind us to look where we are, to see that God is here within me right now, more powerful than any challenge or any problem. And I have to give it over to God, have faith that it's already taken care of, and then watch God at work. Watch your life transform. Watch your life heal. Become the life that you came to live. Choose to remember, I am powerful. Nobody can change that. Nobody can penetrate that, and only God will show up. I am powerful. Know that with me. I am powerful. I am powerful. I want to hear it like you believe it, together. I am powerful. One more time. I am powerful. The universe knows that now. Close your eyes. Breathe into your heart. Remember, I am powerful. Breathe that in the quiet. And feel it resonating. Feel it vibrating. And now we take that within. We take all this truth within and know, I am so blessed. Right now, for all that I have, I am blessed by all that I am. I am so blessed by all that God is. Breathe into your heart let God reveal, God and I are one. And there's nothing that God cannot do. I know the truth. I accept the truth. I celebrate the power of God at work in me right now and forever. One more time, a little quieter.
I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful for all that God is. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful.
Am so blessed. Sometimes it's hard to sing that when you feel that you're not. When it feels like everything is falling apart and there's nowhere to turn. But the very act of bringing forth the truth, of so-called faking it till we make it, really is powerful. To sing the truth, to affirm with power and zeal and faith, what I haven't seen yet with my senses, what I haven't experienced yet, is the way to bring forth God, to say, God is here, and I'm a creation of that powerful energy of love. Breathe that in. I am so blessed. Remember that you are safe. You live and move and have your being in the safety of spirit at all times. Surround yourself consciously with that beautiful white light of truth. That as you radiate the truth, it becomes the truth of you. If you're going through an illness right now, bless it. Bless it. Don't run away from it. Meet it and say, how are you my teacher? Why are you in my life? What do I have to learn about myself as a child of God through this experience, through this journey? Let it reveal what we need to know. In the meantime, we affirm, God is my health. I can't be sick. God is my strength, unfailing, quick. God is my health. I am whole and strong. Breathe that truth in. If you're going through a financial challenge right now, how is this challenge teaching you about you? What do I need to know through going through this? Be open and receptive to it and listen with your heart. We bless any challenge we go through as a teacher. As we affirm, God within me blesses me with abundant good. God within me blesses me with abundant good. I am prosperous. Let that truth take hold. If you're feeling sad or you're grieving any loss, if it feels like everyone around you has left, bless them and know that you are never alone. That God is showing up in many different ways and many different skins
that we, your spiritual family here, love and bless you. Even if it's your first day, it doesn't matter. We know who you are. We recognize that Christ within you, the God being that you are. I am one with God, and I am guided perfectly to my highest and best good. Breathe that truth in. And now let go. Let go into the light of love. Let go into the power of divine love radiating forth from you as you. It isn't outside of yourself. It is who and what we are. Breathe into your heart. And in the quiet of your being, know that love is here and that love is at work. One brief moment in the awareness of divine love brings healing, wholeness, peace of mind, joy beyond all measure. All it takes is remembering God and I are one. Breathe in, let go, and let God. Realization for this truth, we are deeply grateful. And so it is.